patients who turned to therapy, and in the course of their work struggled with existence pain. This was not the reason they came to me for help. On the contrary, all 10 were suffering from the common problems of everyday life: loneliness, self-contempt, impotence, migraine headaches, sexual compulsivity, obesity, hypertension, grief, a consuming love obsession, mood swings, desperation. Yet somehow, a somehow that unfolds differently in each story, therapy uncovered deep roots of these everyday problems, roots stretching down to a bedrock of existence. I want, is heard throughout these tales. One patient cried, "I want my dead darling daughter back. She neglected her 2 living sons." Another insisted, "I want to fuck every woman I see," as his lymphatic cancer invaded the crawl spaces of his body. And another pleaded, "I want the parents, the childhood I never had," as he agonized over 3 letters he could not bring himself to open. And another declared, "I want to be young forever," as she, an old woman, could not relinquish her obsessive love for a man 35 years younger. I believe that the primal stuff of psychotherapy is always such existence pain, and not, as is often claimed, repressed instinctual strivings or imperfectly buried shards of a tragic personal past. In my therapy with each of these 10 patients, my primary clinical assumption, an assumption on which I based my technique, is that basic anxiety emerges from a person's endeavors, conscious and unconscious, to cope with the harsh facts of life, the givens of existence. I have found that 4 givens are particularly relevant to psychotherapy: the inevitability of death for each of us and for those we love, the freedom to make our lives as we will, our ultimate aloneness, and finally, the absence of any obvious meaning or sense to life. However grim these givens may seem, they contain the seeds of wisdom and redemption. I hope to demonstrate in these 10 tales of psychotherapy that it is possible to confront the truths of existence and harness their power in the service of personal change and growth. Of these facts of life, death is the most obvious, most intuitively apparent. At an early age, far earlier than is often thought, we learn that death will come and that from it there is no escape. Nonetheless, everything, in Spinoza's words, endeavors to persist in its own being. At one's core, there is an ever-present conflict between the wish to continue to exist and the awareness of inevitable death. To adapt to the reality of death, we are endlessly ingenious in devising ways to deny or escape it. When we are young, we deny death with the help of parental reassurances and secular and religious myths. Later, we personify it by transforming it into an entity, a monster, a sandman, a demon. After all, if death is some pursuing entity, then one may yet find a way to elude it. Besides, frightening as a death-bearing monster may be, it is less frightening than the truth that one carries within the spores of one's own death. Later, children experiment with other ways to attenuate death anxiety. They detoxify death by taunting it, challenge it through daredevilry, or desensitize it by exposing themselves in the reassuring company of peers and warm buttered popcorn to ghost stories and horror films. As we grow older, we learn to put death out of mind. We distract ourselves. We transform it into something positive: passing on, going home, rejoining God, peace at last. We deny it with sustaining myths. We strive for immortality through imperishable works, by projecting our seed into the future through our children, or by embracing a religious system that offers spiritual perpetuation. Many people take issue with this description of death denial. "Nonsense," they say. "We don't deny death. Everyone's going to die. We know that. The facts are obvious. But is there any point on dwelling on it?" The truth is that we know, but do not know. We know about death. Intellectually, we know the facts, but we, that is, the unconscious portion of the mind that protects us from overwhelming anxiety, have split off or dissociated the terror associated with death. This dissociative process is unconscious and visible to us, but we can be convinced of its existence in those rare episodes when the machinery of denial fails and death anxiety breaks through in full force. That may happen only rarely, sometimes only once or twice in a lifetime. Occasionally, it happens during waking life, sometimes after a personal brush with death, or when a